When I launched this podcast in December of 2023, I said that I wanted to do so because I'd heard some great stuff in the 40 plus interviews I conducted in preparing to write Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. And I wanted to share some of that great stuff with you. So often, power is associated with oppression, domination, even violence. People who hold power are presumed to be oblivious, dangerous, corrupt, even abusive. And with good cause. There certainly are many powerful people in this world who have done some pretty terrible things and continue to do so. They're boastful, out of contact with reality, believe that laws that govern right relationship with others have nothing to do with them. I'm sure you don't need to search far to find the kinds of leaders I'm talking about here. But what I wanted to make sure you got the chance to hear is that not all leaders can be described as such. Over and over again in these interviews, I met people who were quite aware of the power that they had and were extremely reflective about the ways that they were using it. I've come to believe that there is such a thing as the holy exercise of power. It's not easy. No one's perfected the art, but there are lots of good people out there trying. It's not been possible here in these two seasons to share all the interviews I did, just over half. Sometimes the reason an interview is missing is because the person's life changed so much in the last 2 years that it felt like the stories they offered wouldn't be the same stories that they offer now. Sometimes it's been because the interview was very personal and information was shared that wouldn't be appropriate to share publicly. Quite frankly, however, lots of the time it was because of me and my lack of skill in using the technology well. Either I only remembered to hit record halfway through the interview, or there was something muffling a microphone, et cetera, et cetera. I did warn you in the opening of the podcast series that this was an exercise in incompetence for me. The fact that I have had anything to share at all is thanks to one very special person in my life, my son, Micah Garrido, who's a professional sound engineer in Los Angeles and did an amazing job stitching together shreds of audio into something that sounded coherent. Micah is the only person who listened to the audio from the interviews more than I did. He's also 29, and I thought that as a way of wrapping up this project, it would be fun to do one more interview, an interview with him about what he heard as the youngest person in the whole mix. Micah, I know when I was doing these interviews and then getting ready for the podcast, I had the chance to listen to them all over again. So I feel like I've listened to what the people who I spoke with had to say a lot. But the only person possibly who's listened to these interviews more than me is you, because you've had to go over them over and over again to erase barking dogs or get rid of ums and unnaturally long pauses and the garbage truck driving by. So when I was listening for threads that I thought I was hearing across what some of the people who I was interviewing were saying, but I would be very curious from a different set of ears what you heard as threads across the interviews.
Yeah. You know, there were several things that started to come up as repeated things. I think the first thing that I want to say about it is that what I enjoyed the most was hearing the diversity of people that you talk to. Like in general, you interviewed people with power, but you did a good job getting a diversity of people with a lot of different type of power. And as you kind of talked about, like, there were some people that had more overt power, would identify more with saying they had overt power, and some folks that realistically and also like identified as such with influence, right? With maybe not the ability to hire and fire people, but people who were like thought leaders and people who were sitting on councils, like more communal, multiple different types of power structures that people operated within. And the most compelling part to me was that regardless of the power structure that they were operating within, there were really similar behaviors. So a couple things that really stood out to me, definitely the generational difference between power and influence. And we can come back to that and I can give you my perspective as probably the youngest person that you've interviewed.
That's true. That's true.
On the power and influence thing. But then something that I mentioned to you yesterday, and I think this is like, I want to get to the most important thing. Of all the people that you interviewed, there is no rule, but there's nothing that makes you a good leader. There's no like set number of things that you can do that make you a good leader. A good leader is about the ability to adapt, the ability to change the methods you're using, or like the, I guess the way that I would best think about it is like you have guardrails on as you make your decisions, and different decisions are going to demand that you move the guardrails, right? You need to adapt the guardrails to the situations that you're working on. So no hard, fast rules, all guidelines is kind of the thing that I come across in terms of, and it makes sense too. Like there's no handbook. There's just a lot of suggestions and a lot of advice. Mm-hmm. That really stood out to me. And then there are a lot of people really emphasize responsibility and the idea of rather than enacting power over, it's you have to come in with the mentality that you're serving the community that you are occupying a position of power. Like in some sense, the higher up you are in some kind of hierarchy, the more people that you answer to, you are answering to more and more of the constituency.
Hmm. Rather than more and more people answering to you, it's your more and more people.
Yeah. So. And I see that in my own field as well. And so that was kind of a cool thing to understand. And then the last thing, and I think this is kind of the most important of them, people in power, they need to earn the respect, trust, and grace from the people that they serve. That is their responsibility, because no human can be perfect and people in power are never going to be perfect. And so the best thing that you could do to lead a community is to be so connected with them that when you do make a mistake, it does not alter the fundamental relationship that you have with them. Like you making a mistake can't undermine the authority that you have, but that privilege doesn't come unearned.
Yeah.
And that's not like, again, not a rule that I heard. It was just a commonality between the successful situations that I heard and the unsuccessful ones.
Yeah, I too was definitely struck by the idea that there is no one way to lead, no one way to exercise power, but that we are the healthy and holy exercise of power is always between, I like the image of guardrails. Mm-hmm. On one side, people who I talked to didn't want to abuse their power by overusing it, like and worry that it would be used for their own agenda rather than for the sake of the people that they're serving, mm-hmm. like you talked about. And then on the other side of the guardrail would be not using their power appropriately and not getting done what they could get done for the people that they're serving. Yeah. So the idea of service is a consistent thread. Responsible service is like an image of what healthy power looks like, and that where exactly those guardrails stand, nobody's entirely sure. Like they do seem to be moving. We all know that we want in between those two, but it's hard to know when we've swung too far in any one direction, because there's always going to be a diversity of opinions within our communities around whether we're doing too much in this regard or too much in that regard. And so we're always in some ways living in a perennial tension. And that was something that I heard from the interviewees, was that there's no way in leadership or in the exercise of power that's not going to have one in kind of a permanent state. It's not like you're ever going to hit it and you're going to have it once and for all. Like you'll be in stasis. You're always going to be living in that tension. And that then what was most needed spiritually was resources for living in the midst of that tension when you're never quite sure that you've got it exactly right for this moment in time.
Well, and like, I want to drive this home that like, the reason you as a leader need the trust of the community is you're going to make those swings. Mm-hmm. You're going to make those swings, and people within your community are going to disagree with you on it. But from my experience and from what I heard, like the most important thing isn't whether or not you as a constituent agree with your superior. It's whether or not you trust that they are making the right decision, or you can at least empathize. For example, like there are so many situations, especially when I was employed in a studio setting. And this happens actually all the time in freelance situations too, where it's like, I don't agree with the direction that you're giving me, or I don't agree with the decision made, but you have related to me in an empathetic way. You have made me confident in your ability to lead regardless of whether this individual decision was the right one or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I would forgive you for making the wrong decision because I can empathize that you made that decision out of a reliable mindset.
Well, and that your intention is for the common good, even
totally.
If I'm,
that's the biggest
I'm seeing it or I don't agree with that this is in the common good's interest, but you, mm-hmm. I know, I trust you enough to know that your intention is the common good. Are there any particular podcasts or lines from podcasts that have continued to sort of linger with you?
There's several. I think the one that really got me most recently was Megan McElroy, mm-hmm. and talking about the kind of foreseeable end of her order that she serves, and the idea God was fine before your order existed and God will be fine after. And it's about finding like the meaning in serving right now. And that just seemed like a really healthy use of power, right? Because it's acknowledging, okay, there is, in terms of those guardrails we talked about, there is something we can do right now. There are plenty of things that we can do right now. We also know that there are plenty of things that we won't be able to do in the future. And it's not really worth getting all too worked up about those. It's about what we can do right now. And I just that one recently stood out as a really strong usage of power.
You know, I asked everybody in that group that I interviewed always with the beginning story of a moment when I shared a moment when I woke up and I realized that I was no longer David in the story of another person, in the narrative of another person, that I had taken on the role of Goliath. I was the one who had more power. I would be curious from your point of view, has there been a moment like that in your life? Because as you said, you're the youngest person that I've interviewed on this matter.
Yeah.
But where you wake up and you realize I'm Goliath.
Professionally, not really. It's also in the nature of the positions that I hold where I kind of naturally have to answer to somebody else.
Well, yeah. One of the ways we talked about, like, you're exercising power in helping with the podcast thing was there's a lot of exercise and power just in editing a transcript, right? And editing an interview and bringing down to an hour and 15 minute interview and us deciding together what actually is going to be a 15 to 25 minute podcast. Mm-hmm. What were some of the ways that you found yourself exercising the capacity to change things and create a narrative in doing?
Yeah, well, actually this kind of leads into something that I wanted to mention earlier, which is that this situation, in my role as a sound editor, I think of myself as someone with a lot of influence, but not a ton of power, because in my mind, influence is something that's a little bit more subconscious. People with influence, their method of working and in some sense their responsibility is to suggest, right? To advise. And in my personal opinion, I think my role as a sound editor is to advise the person that I'm working for, in this case, you, how can we prepare this audio to be the most impactful listen that it can be? I think of myself as influencing the listeners of this because I have a responsibility to make someone's idea the most concise and understandable that it will ever be.
That's interesting. Yeah, it was one of the things that popped up to me really clearly or early on in doing the interviews was that I was using the language of power. And it was kind of like when I worked on that earlier book on truth. Truth is a huge umbrella word and people mm-hmm. are using the word to mean related, but slightly different things.
Sure.
And the same thing was happening here with the word power is mm-hmm. that people were using that word to mean a variety of different things and had different feelings that were evoked in them by the word of power. Mm-hmm. And that it seemed to me like a lot of times those were drawn a little bit more along generational lines. Mm-hmm. People of my generation were much more hesitant around the use of power and had associations with it of kind of violence or oppression, and were real hesitant in some ways mm-hmm. to claim power. Mm-hmm. Whereas those under the age of 40 or whatever were much more comfortable with the word power and a little more hesitant around the word influence, perhaps because of the role that social media has mm-hmm. played in their own generation's life.
Yeah.
Do you yourself share kind of those different perceptions? Like, would you say, yeah, I also have more discomfort with some of the word influence?
I would say I definitely understand the generational difference between the two. I also think it's about what you consume and what you identify power with. So like, for example, especially in situations of racial bias and police violence, if innocent people die, you'll often see folks my age and around put not rest in peace to the victim, but rest in power, because this person who died unjustly did not have the opportunity to exercise the power that they held in their human life. And now it is the collective's job to reclaim that.
Is there anything that you heard in the interviews that gave you hope, maybe added a nuance or tweaked the narrative of power that you've seen in the world or that you've experienced in life?
I want to assume positive intent a lot more. There was a lot of talk about the common good. People do go out and do things because of their vision of the common good. I am now less likely to think that someone is occupying a position of power just because they enjoy the position of power. If there's anything that I learned from this, it's that being in a position of power is not a whole lot of fun. What it sounds like, a select number of perks.
My fear is that when people see how challenging leadership is, or to hear people talk about it, that they might think, I'm not going to do it because it's a hard life. Mm. One of the things that struck me was actually, and I don't know why I heard this so differently than you, but I heard some people who are exercising power in these interviews who actually were describing what I thought to be they were their happiest selves.
Sure.
And that the positions that they had and the fact that they finally were in real leadership roles within different organizations and being able to affect the kind of change they wanted to see and impact it, like some of those people that I interviewed were some of the happiest people that I interviewed. And I kind of, in the end, came away with a fuller understanding that to be fully human is to have power and to own it and to enjoy what one could make happen. And that it's not something for myself now that so much I'm as scared about or as nervous about, but that I know too, from having written the book, I do think I'm coming into my happier self when I have a fuller sense of ownership of my agency or what I can make happen. Knowing I can't make everything happen, I still hit lots of frustrations, but I know that I'm my better self when I'm able to believe that I can make things happen.
Totally.
Well, I want to say thank you to you for being my hidden partner in this whole project. So Micah, now I'm going to hand this over to you and you can use all your power to edit it however you want.
I'm going to take all of our sound bites and make us say awful things.
Thank you one last time for being such a faithful listener to this podcast all the way to the end. I hope as a way of keeping in touch, you will sign up to receive my bi-monthly newsletter at anngarrido.com. Perhaps I can also nudge you in the direction of checking out Micah's work at alternatone.com. That's alternatone.com. You'll get a sense of just how lucky I was to talk him into doing this project with me. He's quite accomplished. If he could make my audio sound good, he can make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. In addition to the editing, Micah also wrote the music for both seasons of the podcast, another gift I'm very grateful for. Know that even as this podcast ends, I'll continue praying for you as you immerse yourself in the craziness of life and continue to grow into being the leader that God's called you to be in this world.